The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 01111911.
So, I did a thing. I went and got a dog. So I had Oliver until just before we went on vacation. He was my cat. He was a great cat. He was a wonderful cat. And I spent the last 2 months of his life just caring for him and trying to keep him comfortable until we knew it was time. And it was time. So then I went away for 2 weeks. Had a marvelous time, as I've shared with you. Geez, Dave, please don't tell us about Amsterdam again. No, don't worry. But then I came home to an empty house. And actually, I kind of love being by myself. I'm perfectly happy to live alone. And I'm in a perfectly fine relationship with Kathy. Just celebrated our 7th anniversary. And it's all good. But there was just kind of something missing. And then every Friday, Greer and Stacy come in. And we have a dog. And we tell you, you know, the dogs are being destroyed. And puppies are being euthanized. And it's terrible out there. But I wasn't doing anything about it. I'm going home to an empty house. So I decided, you know, I thought about getting another cat because it's so much easier to have a cat. And I looked at a few cats and it's just like, no, this is too soon. I just had Oliver and Oliver was a one-of-a-kind cat. I just don't feel right bringing in another cat. Let's go look at dogs. And all I knew is that I wanted something small because in my homeowners association, dogs have to be under 50 pounds. And I wanted an older dog. A, because I'm partial to them. And B, because I'm kind of old myself. The last thing I want is a puppy. So just give me a small, older, mellow dog. And let me give this a try. And I looked at a couple of different places. But I knew where I was going all along. And that would be up to Creston to see Charlotte Mead at Mead Canine Rescue. She's been on the show numerous times over the years. She is so passionate about dog rescue. And her sanctuary, I think currently she's got at least 70 dogs. Most of them small. She's got dogs that are blind, dogs that can't hear, dogs that have three legs. I mean, oh. And they all live together. It's just absolutely amazing. So I went up last week and I had looked on the website, seen a couple dogs. And I just sat down on a chair and, all right, who's going to come to me? And they're yipping and they're yapping and they're barking and they're running all around. And then this little dog comes scooting by. Well, who's that? Well, that's Danny Boy. Danny Boy. Well, Danny Boy came up on my lap and he just kind of sat there like just like a slug. He wasn't excited to see me. He wasn't responding at all. He just sat on my lap. So I made the mistake of asking Charlotte, well, what's his story? Oh. Well, he was rescued off the streets of Tijuana. And I found out later that there had been this torrential rainstorm. And I guess his poor little dog is drowning, and somebody scooped him up out of the water and got him to a veterinarian, and they didn't think he was going to make it, and he made it. And a lovely, lovely woman who used to be a restaurateur in Santa Monica named Geraldine does dog rescue down in Mexico. And she arranged for the dog to come north and ended up at Mead Canine Rescue. Well, how's the dog? Oh, the dog has an enlarged heart. I don't know the health issues, but I guess there's a scale. You know, like with humans, there's stage one cancer, stage two. You don't want stage four because that's the serious one. Well, with canine cardiac, it's a scale of 1 to 6, with 6 being the worst. Well, guess what? This dog is a 6. Really overweight. It's probably 6-7 pounds overweight. Has a large heart. So I looked at Charlotte. I said, oh, so if I took this dog, I'd be doing hospice work, right? And she said, well, you know, he could live another month. He could hang on for another year. I mean, we've tried to place him, and people love the dog, but they don't want to take on the responsibility because he's not going to be around much longer. So I came home and I thought about it, and I've done that kind of work on a very small scale before. It's been a while, and I haven't had a dog in 7 years. Kathy has a dog, but I don't have my own dog. And I texted Charlotte the next day, and I just said, okay, I'll take him. I'm just looking for some kind of different challenge. And however long this dog has, it deserves to be loved, right? It deserves to be cared for. So we went up on Sunday morning. I have renamed this dog Duffy. He just looks like a Duffy to me. If you're on my Facebook page, you can see more photos of this dog than you'll ever care to see. I've plastered this dog all over the place. He's got those thick eyebrows like Andy Rooney. Remember from 60 Minutes? Those thick, bushy eyebrows. And I went and I bought a big doggy bed and I put that in the living room, and that's just kind of been his home. I can't get him in to see a doctor before Thursday morning. He takes heart medicine twice a day. That may change. And on Thursday, we're going to find out really just how bad he is, how serious this is. If there are fluids around his heart. And, you know, you get a dog and you're like, okay, you know, he's going to come. I'm going to open the door. There he is, wagging his tail and barking and greeting me and so happy to see me. That's not this dog. The last two nights, I go home and I come in the back door. And I go up to the living room and there he is snoring away in his doggy bed. He's just sleeping. And I know that from past experience, because I've had so many dogs over the years, that it takes a while. And that people say, oh, I'll give it a month. Give it a couple months, and he'll come around. Once he knows that this is his forever home, things are going to be fine. And I've been responding, I don't know if this dog has 2 months. He might. I'm going to do my best to make sure that he does. And of course, when you get a dog, your schedule just changes overnight, right? It was like tonight, I had plans I was going to go to the film festival. I wanted to see the awards ceremony. Now I'm going to go home and take care of Duffy because he needs me. A cat, you know, he's, hey, have a good weekend. I'll see you on Monday. No, a dog requires much more commitment. So it's like on Monday morning, I'm having my eyes dilated, and I gotta cover Duffy somehow. Sunday, we've got an event to go to in Santa Barbara. I gotta cover Duffy somehow. And it's funny, this is day three, but I'm glad I'm doing this. It's a different kind of relationship between animal and human. And I appreciate all the praise I've been getting on social media. And I so appreciate the sentiment, but I'm not that guy. People are making me out to be something that I'm not. But I'm hoping that if enough of us will come forward and just take a dog, it doesn't have to be a dog with a heart issue, all right? It doesn't have to be this dog. But, you know, it's really gotten out of hand, particularly in California, but it's all across the country. And these, there are dogs that are 2-3 years old. There are these COVID dogs. We talk about this every Friday, that when the pandemic hit, everybody went out and got a dog. And then when it was over, everybody gave up their dog. And so now everybody is just so crowded and slammed. Maybe one day I'll bring Duffy in. I've got to get him to lose some weight. That's really going to determine how long he lives. And Craig was just asking me when I came in if I wanted to come up with a new sign-off that included Duffy. And maybe at some point, let's see how he does. Let's see what sparks in my mind. But it's been good. And I think it's going to be great. So that's my news of the day. I have a new dog. His name is Duffy. And he's in my life. And I'm in his. We're just two old dogs, grumpy. All right, Dave, can we start this show? Sure. I'm Dave Congleton. It is Tuesday, April 30th, 2024.
When it's not always raining, there'll be days like this. When there's no one complaining, there'll be days like this. Everything falls into place like the flick of a switch. Well, my mama told me there'll be days like this.
A good Tuesday afternoon, one and all. Welcome to Hometown Radio. I am Dave Congleton. I'm here. Craig Hill is here. You're here. That's all we need. We're here all the way until 7 o'clock. On this broadcast today, a little bit of everything. Jacqueline Frederick is going to join us at 4:05 from the Latino Outreach Council to invite everyone this weekend to Cinco de Mayo. A big party, a good time will be had by all. She will explain. And then after that, around 4:30, Claudia Harmon Wortham is back with us. It is time for the 8th annual Cambria Bee, Butterfly, and Bat Fair. I may be having a senior moment, but I don't recall bats from previous events. Dr. Larry Martinez at 5:05 is just back from Petra in Jordan, one of the great places to visit in the world. Larry has been there. He will take us there and share stories. Stu Jenkins at 6:05 talks about the Supreme Court and the recent case they heard about homelessness. That's a lot to cover. We will do all that and more. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio. This is a Dave Congleton show, always your Hometown Radio talk show. A couple local stories worth noting. One, no surprise, Erica Stewart, the mayor of San Luis Obispo, has announced that she will be seeking re-election in November. I mentioned the other day, I've not heard this directly from Don Ortiz Legg. Why are people calling me on my cell phone in the middle of my show? I don't know. One of these days I'm going to answer it. I haven't heard directly from Supervisor Ortiz Legg, but I've heard other people tell me that she's probably not going to be seeking re-election. So I expect that Mayor Stewart will run down the road. And unless something dramatic happens, I suspect that she would win. But we will see. Now, if this person will stop calling me so I can get to my phone. The other story worth noting, Karen Vealy is reporting at Kelt Coast News that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals denied a petition seeking to shut down Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant. After agreeing to close the nuclear power plant in 2025, PG&E received backing from both federal and state officials to extend the operating life of Diablo Canyon through 2030, with the goal of providing Californians electric reliability. However, PG&E needed to obtain license renewals from the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission to keep operating the plant past 2025. PG&E requested an exemption to the regulation, which the NRC approved in 2023. So then, San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace, Friends of the Earth, and the Environmental Working Group petitioned for a review of the decision, arguing against the exemption. I mean, this thing just goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. I think it's pretty clear that Diablo Canyon is going to stay open. And judging by the lack of public uproar, I get the sense that most people are fine with Diablo Canyon continuing to operate. My question is, if we have Diablo Canyon and it's effective and efficient and gives us the energy, why are we developing wind power off the coast of Morro Bay North? Why are we going to be the first in the country to have all these wind towers? I'm not an expert on wind power. I am open to be persuaded. That was when I first started the show in 1992. I was not a fan of PG&E. I'm still not a fan of PG&E. I will never forgive them for San Bruno. But I have learned to make a distinction between the suits in San Francisco and the people that work here in this community. And the people who work here in this community, I trust. The suits up north, I don't trust them. But that's just my skeptical nature. But we seem to be making this commitment. Yes, we want Diablo Canyon to stick around. All right. So if we got this and we've got reliable power, why are we going to go out and spend all this money with unknown environmental consequences for wind power? That I do not understand. We are going to go to California Headline News and ABC Radio News. Craig will update us on time saver traffic and weather together. I have heard from numerous people about our interview last night with Robert Korn Revere about the First Amendment and college protests. And you appreciated the conversation, as did I. Bob, I've known Bob for 52 years. But Craig and I are going to talk a little bit about that, and we'll invite your thoughts as well. Followed by our celebration of Cinco de Mayo, followed by the return of the bees, and then we will visit Petra. Stick around. You're listening to Hometown Radio. I'm Dave Congleton. We'll be right back. tomorrow on this broadcast, Lance Parker is going to look at a ballot initiative in the state of Arizona that's going to be coming up in the November election about homelessness. It's kind of different. We'll talk about that. Also, Hillary Roberts Grant, speaking of dogs, let's talk about the governor of South Dakota. Why is there such a public uproar over what the governor did and why she put it in her memoir? We'll talk. Elizabeth Barrett joins us on Thursday, our good friend, the reluctant therapist. I think it's next Tuesday, but definitely next week. Dan Dow, our district attorney, is going to come by and talk about his military service and where he has been for the last, 7 months? And what exactly he did and why he did it. And we'll talk about what's happening overseas. Always looking forward to a conversation with Dan Dow. Jacqueline Frederick from the Latino Outreach Council joins us today at 4:05 to get us ready for Cinco de Mayo. Always a popular time of the year. It is a Dave Congleton show, always your hometown radio talk show. I want to follow up with two recent conversations that we had. Last week, Dr. John Ashbaugh put on his historian hat, and we looked back at the campus protests of the late 60s and early 70s when John and I were both in college. And we were trying to draw some parallels between those college protests and what you're seeing today. And then yesterday, we had Bob Korn Revere, a noted First Amendment attorney. And if you didn't hear either one of these conversations, podcasts are up now at 920kvc.com. Both are worth a listen. And what Bob was explaining is that the Supreme Court for decades has always embraced the idea of a college campus as a robust place of ideas, even unpopular ideas, even hateful ideas. But Bob was quick to point out that there is a distinction between the expression of an idea that, you know, hey, Craig Hill, you're a knucklehead, or hey, Dave Congleton, you're a whatever, right? As hateful as it may be, it's still protective speech. But as Bob was arguing, there's a difference between speech and so-called civil disobedience, where what we just heard the headlines of what's going on at Columbia University with students occupying a building and refusing to leave. Well, now, that's more than just speech. So as far as I'm concerned, I defend the right of students to have their opinions and to express their opinions, as unpopular as they might be, as much as I disagree with all that. And I say that as somebody who spent, about 10 years on campus as a so-called professor. But there's a line that's crossed. You go to a whole new zone when you bring in violence and property destruction. And then it's up to the university to decide how tolerant they want to be. And so, like in the case of Columbia, they've decided they want those students out of the building. And we can debate the wisdom of that all you want. But the university has made a decision. They want the students to leave. And if you don't leave, you'll be suspended. So if those students don't leave and Columbia decides to suspend them, I'm fine with that. Craig, I want to hear from you on this because you heard both conversations with Bob and John, and you and I have talked about this over the last few months. You've been watching this. Yeah. What are your feelings when you see these stories?
It was predictable, and as I watched it kind of evolved, I thought to myself, the line from Malcolm X, the chickens have come home to roost, and I'm watching it evolve. And then I realized that at first I was going to get a little angry about it. And then I realized, you know, it's just going to be the same story. It's going to evolve, devolve, and flame out. But in the meantime, there's people that are going to get hurt. Yep. And not just physically, but you're going to have people's student education getting hurt because there are people. There's a video of somebody who's just trying to get to class, a Jewish student, just trying to get to class, yeah. Economics class, couldn't get to class because they wouldn't let him.
What happened?
He was just trying to get through.
Like a crowd?
Yeah, crowd to get into his building, and they wouldn't let him in.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have varying groups. You have the undereducated people on the topic who are just there to be protesters, who are just there to push, you know, that idea of oppressor, victim mentality. So they're there no matter what it is, they're going to be protesting, kind of almost like the semi-professionals, you know, like the AAA players of protesting. You got your dollar store Che Guevara types who are going to try to be involved in this. And they're all going to be part of this. But the problem is, and this is where it's really starting to devolve, is the three janitors. Have you heard about them?
No, the three janitors.
The three janitors. In the building that was taken over, there was three janitors.
At Columbia?
Yeah. Okay. And they were not allowed to leave.
For how long?
It was 45 minutes or so.
Wow.
But it doesn't matter. Because once they were not allowed to leave, that's kidnapping. You can't do that. You can't stop someone from leaving.
I agree.
So at that point, the people that are involved in that, they're going to see some, hopefully see some serious retribution legally to them. But as far as the protests themselves, I can't take them seriously because I don't believe that they fully understand what they're fighting for. I mean, you got college kids who are advocating for a terrorist organization that just murdered over 1,200 people, and they're advocating for that group. And you have the original.
Well, some of them, so let's be clear, some of them are advocating for Hamas. Others are just advocating for the Palestinian people.
But that's the problem, is these things always start with the good people, as Donald Trump once said. The good people, that's where it starts. But then you get these people who infiltrate and then twist it into their own desires.
It's fascinating to me how quickly this is spreading around. I mean, we just heard the news. It's in North Carolina now. And we mentioned yesterday, Georgia, and geez, up north in Humboldt.
Yeah.
Cal Poly Humboldt.
I'm not surprised just because it is literally like matches, you know, in a gas-filled tinderbox. It's college campuses. This is where it's happening, and this is where they're being taught this idea, that Marxist revolutionary idea of the victim and oppressor paradigm. And then you got college teachers who are involved in it as well. And part of this, none of this surprises me. It disappoints me. And I hope that someday that these students, when they get older, will realize the error of their ways.
There's a fascinating article in the Wall Street Journal that we might bring up in our conversation on Thursday with Elizabeth Barrett, that there is one main difference between the students today and the students of the Vietnam era, and that is the COVID generation. Even before all this was going on, the Wall Street Journal showed these studies of college campuses, students just isolating, eating meals in their dorm rooms and not engaging with people. The point being that they're more susceptible to getting caught up in a movement, which is what's taking place.
And with that being said, actually, this is a positive thing. They're off their computers. They're out. They're socializing with people. Maybe I don't agree with what they're doing, but at least they're doing it together.
They're communicating together.
Yes. I mean, you know, they're with hey, where do you get those neckerchiefs? Those are lovely. What store can I get those at? Then they're hanging out. They're eating food together. At least they're socializing.
One prediction I will have, even though I'm terrible with predictions, none of my predictions come true, but I'm going to make them anyway. People are like, well, it's going to be Chicago. The Democrats are gathering in Chicago, and it's going to be 1968 all over again. I guarantee you it will not be. The protesters may come to Chicago. They could protest, but they're not going to disrupt the convention. That's not going to happen. Things have changed in 50 years.
Yeah, people are always hoping for the next thing.
Well, they tried it in 2004 with Bush, wherever the Republican convention was. They tried to disrupt, and they didn't even get close to the building.
But I think back in 2004, you were still dealing with the backwash of the American patriotism movement after 9/11. What I would say would be different now is you have a militant, entitled group of young people who feel justified and feel that they have this false virtue that they can do whatever they want and they can't be stopped. That to me is
one
of the
differences. They're kids.
Yeah, but that's the idea is
they're kids.
In 2001, there was nothing to rebel against. Now they're finding any kind of thing to revolutionize.
What's the line from the Wild One? What do you guys What are you guys rebelling against?
What do you got?
What do you got?
Yeah. But
So we're in agreement. We're okay with free expression.
Yeah, that's 100%.
You cross the line and you hold people prisoner, you disrupt, you commit violence, then it's okay for the law to come in and shut you down.
Yeah,
I think agreement on that.
The law and the school. The school has rules, because not only do the protesters have rights, so do the other students, the 99% of students who just want to go to class and get their degree. You know, the classic quote, you know, your rights to swing your fist end at the tip of my nose. Their right to protest ends when the other students, everyone else, is kept from their rights.
And the students who didn't get a COVID, who didn't get a high school graduation commencement because of COVID, they want to have a college graduation.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and continue the conversation. I'm Dave Congleton, along with Craig Hill. That equals Hometown Radio. All right, let's take a call. We've got Ron checking in at Roy Grande. Hey, Ron.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
We're good.
I missed the last 5 minutes, so I don't know if this was covered or not, but I'm 78, so I lived through the Vietnam War. In fact, I was drafted in 66 and served 2 years through 68, and I remember everything that was going on. You can't compare the two.
Why not?
Between what is going on.
Why not?
Well, because what was going on back in the 60s and early 70s was a revolt or what have you, protest against the government of the United States. What you have now is a protest against a foreign country, which is Israel, of what they supposedly are doing to another area's people, and even more so what these people are doing. And I see it reported on the news where they're talking about, let's have another or October 7th is going to be every day. That's what these, some of these people are saying. They're also talking about annihilating, genocide, and what have you. And it just, I understand that if you're a pro Hamas, yes, you're going to stand up for everything that Hamas has done. All right. If you're a pro Palestinian, you're going to look at it like the Israelis have always done these things to us, so we're going to, they should be allowed to do the same thing to Israel. But it reminds me of World War II.
Yeah, but Ron, my point is that the strategies, the techniques, the idea of student protesters trying to disrupt, shut down college campuses, you know, that's what the 60s were all about. Yes, the goals are different, the messages are different, but I see comparison between the two.
Well, what you don't see, I believe, and please don't be offended, but what you don't see is what the reason for these protests. You can have reason for protest because you don't like the way they're painting homes or whatever. You don't like it. But in the Vietnam War, it was a protest against the war, what they believed was an unjust war. Yeah. But for what's going on now, to try and compare it to that, it's just the reason for their disruption, and they're not allowing students to go to school. Basically, they're shutting things down. Jewish students on campus, I mean, they fear for their life.
Well, and in the 19, what was the year in Madison when the guys were killed? I mean, There were people who were killed.
That was Kent State.
Well, not Kent State. I'm talking about the lab explosion. The weathermen and the SDS, they blew up this lab in Madison, and people were killed. Craig, jump in here.
Well,
what do you say to Ron?
I can't disagree. Part of it to me is the fact that these students don't have skin in the game. I mean, they're out there protesting and advocating for a group of people who are a designated terrorist organization, and they're advocating for them, but it's not like they're going to get drafted. They have no skin in the game other than, kind of pushing this idea that one group is bad and the other group is good. It'd be like during Vietnam, if college kids were protesting the French who occupied Vietnam before we did. I mean, there's no reason for it.
What else, Ron?
No, that's I think enough said by me. It is really sad. All these colleges have to do is immediately put a stop to it. I saw them smashing the windows, Ron, follow up.
How do they just stop it?
The same way Texas did. Texas University. They said, you're not going to build an encampment here. You know, Columbia University said, oh, no, you can't do that to the tents, and we're giving you a deadline. Well, the deadline was extended, and now they're saying, look, if you don't leave, we're going to maybe expel you. I mean, my God, they're breaking into a campus building, doing the damage and everything else they're doing. And Columbia's administration is saying, we aren't quite sure that's enough yet.
Well, but we did the same thing in Vietnam, the protests. We took over a building. Not me, but I take your point, though, Ron. Good to hear from you. Thanks for the conversation. On the Stolberg text line, I don't understand this text from Randall at all, so I'm not going to read it. Randall, did you mean to send that to us? Anybody else want in this conversation? 805-543-8830, 800-549-5832. Well, this person on the Stolberg line is arguing that the problem at Columbia, I'll rephrase this, is that the president is Muslim. What the hell does that have to do with anything?
Perhaps they're suggesting that there's a...
I know what they're suggesting, but that's...
Yeah. Well, I to me, as far as the Columbia situation goes... You want to get that building back? You say you got 15 minutes to walk out that door. If you do not, you are automatically expelled. Done. And I'm pretty sure they're getting a lot of phone calls from a lot of parents of the people in that building saying, get out of that building now. You got 15 minutes. And I'm being nice. I was going to say 5 minutes, but I'll give them 15.
Give them a half hour.
Yeah. If you occupy a building, if you stop a student, a single student from attending a class, physically, if you block them from attending a class, you are expelled. That will wipe this up quick.
Well, I think for some people, but there are still those who are going to see this through to the end because for whatever reason, they believe so strongly in their goals.
And once the student is expelled, you are now trespassing. Get off the property. Done. Go protest at a Walmart parking lot.
How would that work out?
Exactly. So that's what they need to do.
All right. 805-543-8830, 800-549-5832. We will see where the summer takes us and whether or not this leads to anything. Let's take another call. We've got Carla weighing in. Hey, Carla.
How are you?
We're good. How are you?
I'm good.
What's up?
I was just thinking of this whole conversation, and I think governments kind of all over the world remind me of the jet stream. We're not going to be able to change governments. And there was an article in the New York Times yesterday, and it was about the Egyptians clamping down on Palestinian protesters, which raised the question, what connection does the Egyptian government have with the Israeli government? And they were just speculating on that. So it just seems to me that the protests, which won't take place on that scale, is really against governments and their control and the few men who decide what direction the country's going.
I think you may be on to something there, Carla, but then that leads to the larger question, what do we do to respond to these protesters?
Well, governments and those in charge, the people that, you know, the Columbia and the governments, they're going to work hand in hand, and there's always going to be protests. There just are. But until we realize that governments, no matter where they are throughout the world, they are going to decide what we're going to do. So maybe we should look to another source.
This is in the New York Times yesterday?
Yes, yes, on Monday.
All right.
And on the front page, and it's called Arab Leaders Pushing Back on Protesters.
I will investigate that. Thank you,
Carla. Excuse me, go on.
No, I just thank you for the call. Thank you. Okay. I will investigate that story. Thank you for bringing that to our attention. Let me squeeze in Charlie before the break. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, Charlie.
In the early 50s, a college in California rioted, and they went downtown near the college, and they burned down the bank and a bunch of other businesses. Do you recall that?
In the 1950s, no. That was before my time.
You know where that college was? In Santa Barbara. It was my Isla Vista, University of California, Santa Barbara.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The students revolted because they were treated so badly by the business people in downtown.
Are you talking about the 1970 attack on the Bank of America?
I don't think it was 70. Was that in the 50s? That was where they burned down the Bank of America and Vista.
I will check with Dr. Martinez when he joins us at 5:05. I'll have to investigate that, Charlie. Thank you. On the Stolberg line, are some of these protesters non-students? Probably. I don't know. Also on the Stolberg line, a perspective you may not have considered. Many college students may not have skin in the game, other they don't want their fees and other funds to pay for a genocide. More than 40,000 Palestinians have lost their lives. If you follow any Palestinians account on Instagram, you might change your perspective. Many of the college protesters were peaceful until police came in forcefully. Thank you for that. We will revisit.
The 920 KBEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kbec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 0111-911.